You are now tuned in to the Nancy Ruffin Show.
Welcome back to another episode of the Nancy Ruffin Show. I am your host, Nancy Ruffin, and this is the podcast where we discuss everything from God to goals to growth. And everything really centers on helping you to improve your level of self-awareness so that everything that you do with a mindfulness and an understanding that you are equipped with everything that you need to be your best self. And also to understand that God got you covered, right? So if you know who you are, if you know that God got your back, there's nothing that you cannot achieve as long as you stay committed to your goals, right? You have God, you have goals. Those two things alone will automatically turn into growth. I hope that you have had an amazing week. I am excited because this week I get to share with you part two of my conversation with actor and playwright A.R. Garcia. If you missed part one, then I encourage you to go back and listen to it because today is a continuation of that conversation. And if you listened last week, then you know that in that episode, AR talked, a lot about art and activism. He talked about how the pandemic inspired a new art medium for him. It also inspired a new film, a new short film. He talked about creating generational wealth. He recently purchased a new home. So all of these things that he was doing during the pandemic, you know, and he said that the pandemic for him was really a blessing in disguise. And so this week we continue the conversation. And on this episode, he digs a little bit deeper into some of the events of 2020. He talks about George Floyd. He talks about colorism and what it means to him being an Afro-Latino man and recognizing that, you know, his blackness, but also recognizing that his experience as an Afro-Latino is not that of a black African-American. It was an incredible conversation, and we also get into parenting, and that is a conversation that always piques my interest as a mom of two little girls, and he really is incredibly transparent in this conversation. He talks about how he had to really do some personal growth and some inner work so that he could actually become the dad and the parent that his children deserved. You know, so it was him recognizing some of his toxic behaviors and how his behaviors were influencing his children without him even realizing it. It was an incredible conversation. So with no further ado, when we come back from the break, we're going to get into part two of my conversation with A.R. Garcia.
Are you tuned in? Because I am. It's the Nancy Ruffin Show.
Absolutely. And I say all of this to say that I understand that my experience is not that of a black man's experience, right? Like, I get that.
That's important too.
Yeah. I get that. Like, my experience and the experience of an African-American, a black man is different.
Right.
And I can't claim that my experience has been that, right? Mm-hmm. Because I understand that there is a clear difference and that there is a distinction, me being a Latino, right? And so I get that. All I'm saying is that I can tell you about my experience, and my experience has been that they don't like me either.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They don't like me either. You know what I'm saying? And if I'm going to identify, I'm going to identify with you before I identify with them. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because my experience is closer to yours than it is to them.
Right.
You know, and my roots are closer to yours than they are to them. And so all of that fueled me during this time and this pandemic. So I went from like bottom of the barrel and drinking every day to like then creating art and then filming this movie, you know, with a film crew, with these amazing actors, Ivan Gores and Modesto Flaco Jimenez and Paul Mariello and filming this, like a whole production with the COVID restrictions and adhering to the guidelines. It was extremely difficult. And then saying, bro, like you can do whatever, and that shifted my whole mindset. And then it just made me say, you know what? I want to get out of this apartment. Like I have to shift, right? Like I have to put myself in a space where I can always be inspired, and it has to be my own. And it made me realize like the only way I can affect change is by doing everything that I want to do, that I need to do in service to other people, right? But I also have to do that in my own life, and I have to be in charge of my own life and do the things that'll be in service to my children. So I was like, I gotta get out from renting. I gotta buy my own house finally and have this for them, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what inspired, you know, everything from the house to the film to the flag to bringing the plays virtually. I'm actually just about to start a four-part reflective conversation series also on art and diversity and how that relates to business. So it's something that we're going to film like every quarter. So it'll be four episodes a year. So far I have a couple of great men that are signed up for the first episode, Jason Rosario, Charlie Vargas, JP Infante.
All amazing men that are out there.
Yeah,
work. You know.
Yeah, I have a conversation. I'm hoping that he will say yes, but he's very interested. Claudio Cabrera.
He's another phenomenal writer, creative. Yeah.
So I teamed up with Edwin Masara, who does La Sala Talks in Uptown. And so it'll be Dominican Soul Productions and La Sala Talks, and we will be doing these conversation series. But you know, for my second episode, I already told your friend and my prima Rosa, she's got to come on. So get ready, Nancy, because you too.
Listen, you know that whatever you need, like I'm there. And that's one thing I love about just I think our creative community, our writer community, that we really do show up, you know, for one another in support. And I think that it's so important because all of us are on our own separate, you know, creative journeys. And we're all doing different things, but all of it is centered really on elevating, you know, our Latinidad and getting our voices and our stories out there. And you know me, like I wholeheartedly believe in the collective power of supporting my fellow artists. You know, people can call, you have called me and it's like, yeah, AR, like whatever you need, what do you need me to do? You know, and I know that I can do that for you. Like whenever I reach out, I'm like, yo, I need to get you back on the show. You like, whatever, just, you know, let me know whenever you need me, you know, I'm there. And it's so important that we continue to reach back, you know.
I created my production company in order to like, and I always say this, to fulfill my artistic dreams and to be able to put people of color in spaces that they normally not in. And for instance, with this four-part reflective series that I'm doing, you know, like, it is, I'm highlighting people of color. Nama.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I love all my white friends.
Listen, they got enough already. There's enough.
This is for us, you know, and it, It's funny because it just so happens that the first episode is going to be like all Dominican men in, mm-hmm. in different, but it won't be like that going forward. It's going to be, it's for everything, you know, Black, any kind of Latino, you know, people of color, period.
Right.
And I just feel like the only way that, you know, we can move forward is by opening our own doors, you Absolutely. Know, and you know that's why I did the movie. I put Modesto Jimenez, who is a Dominican, you know, Afro Latino, you know, that his work is centered around, you know, gentrification and how that's fucking up the communities, right? And Ivan Gores, who's also I believe he's Dominican Puerto Rican. He's just an amazing, powerful actor. And I put these two dudes of color as the stars of this film. And then I put a woman to direct five men. But like, this is what diversity has to be about in the arts, right? And I am lucky and I feel blessed that these people like my shit enough to be like, we're gonna do it. And to see not only the artistic vision, but what this means for the business.
Right.
Right. And, you know, my team is run by Latinas. You know, like I hire mostly women Latinas to like run Dominican Soul Productions. And because they do it better.
Yeah,
like I always make the joke, and you can talk to anybody on my team. I was like, he always hires women, you know, these Latinos, and just tell them no, like, you know, because they keep me focused.
Do right? you think and, that that's because of
my mama,
your mom, the influence that your mom had, yeah. because you see how hard, you know, she's gone in her own business, that you seek out those same kind of qualities, you know, with who you partner up with in your business.
Yeah, man. Like, listen, in my family, I have my mom and my three aunts. All of them are business owners. You know, I was raised by strong-ass Latina women. Like, I have seen firsthand what Latina fucking power is all about. And I'm not stupid. Mm. You know, they're organized. I mean, it's not like I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to hire women. It just so happened to be that, you know, I have producers that are men or whatever, but it's always been the Latinas around me that are like fire and you know, keep the vision on point.
Right.
And I, as a Latino, like as a man, you know, we tend to have this chauvinistic kind of shit that's innate. You know, and it checks that.
Yeah.
And it checks that, you know, and I'm happy. And I'm happy that it does, you know, because if I really want to do the work and push my people forward, like if Latino men have it difficult, then Latina women have it 10 times more difficult.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So if I can make things better by pushing Latinas forward in whatever I'm doing, then that's what I'm gonna do. You know, because every single Latino family has these matriarchs.
Yeah.
Yes. And these matriarchs are the reason why we are blessed the way we are. They're the reasons we have the fire that we have. They're the reason that we're as talented as we are. They're the reason that we are as intelligent as we are. They're the reason that we have this grace. And who am I not to like acknowledge that in my business?
Do you think also that being a girl dad drives some of that? You know, because you are a dad, you have what is it, three daughters that you
three
have?
Three daughters.
Who are Latinas. Yeah, you know, Latina. So is that important to you because you need them to see, you know, what could be possible for them?
Yeah, you know, it definitely is something that drives me immensely. Listen, I've grown immensely in the last few years. And I was an extremely toxic dude, you know, and like most men, you know, I found myself hurting women, using women, and just, you know, callously and for sport, you know, because that is what was conditioned and that what was told that it was okay, right? And that was what my play was about, right? Yes. The Broken Bachelor. Yeah. And I found myself like, okay, you can't be this guy anymore. Like, you got, like, what are you going to show you? Like, people think that when you have daughters, that it meant, you know, for some men, it immediately, you know, switches, you know, the switch in you and you change. For me, it took a lot longer.
Right.
And I woke up a few years ago, like, you can't, what if they find out?
Mm.
Not what if, when they find out.
Yes.
When they find out, what is going to be the thing that softens the blow?
Right.
And I said, nothing. And then I said, and then I realized that the only thing that's going to soften the blow is that they saw a radical change in their father. My father's not that guy anymore. That is the only way that they're going to be able to reconcile and be like, it's okay. My father, you know, he was this, but I know he's this now.
Right. Wow.
So I was like, you got to change. Not like tomorrow, like right now.
Wow.
And so everything that I do in my art and in business, like, I want them to see that, you know, yo, dad, you know, the way he uplifts his mom,
right?
He uplifts women in business, you know, and in the arts in the same manner.
Right.
And that he's for Latinas. And so they see that, you know, and they acknowledge that. And you know, being a girl dad to three Dominican teenagers.
Yo, my father, he used to, my poor dad, man, like, he didn't know what to do with girls. He would buy like parenting books, trying to figure out, you know, like, what is going on here. And listen, I put my father, me specifically, my sister has always been like the good one, like the good child. I was the rebellious one. I was the one that wanted to be in the street.
Oh, my,
I was boy crazy. He hated the fact, like, I always, oh my God, my poor dad. But like, so I get it, you know, and being a parent in general isn't easy. Being a parent to girls, a dad to girls, yeah, even harder.
My twin girls came to live with me during the pandemic, and that shifted my whole way of life. That was a big reason for me buying a house. And it just shifted, like, how I viewed every relationship I was having with every woman in my life. Like,
wow.
You know, I'm talking about, like, a, you know, not romantically, just across the board.
Just relationships,
like,
in general.
Just in relationships in general. Like, it was just like, yo, this, there's no book that can outline what to do. Like,
let me ask you this. What have you learned about yourself this past year? You know, just as a dad, as a man, as an artist, like, I know that there's been some level of growth, right? What would you say has been the thing that you've learned about yourself or rediscovered about who you are?
I learned recently that I don't give myself enough grace. I learned recently I don't give myself enough grace. I'm extremely too hard on myself. I realized that that I have made mistakes, and I'm going to continue to make mistakes. And I'll share this with you. I recently had a conversation with my daughter, and, you know, it was a heavy one. And she said to me, she goes, you always end the conversation with, you always say you don't know what you're doing. And I was like, motherfucker, because I don't. You know, and I've been a parent for 26 years.
Right.
You know, my oldest son is 26. And I realized that that was just like an excuse that I was giving her. And I said to her, you know, you got to understand, like, you don't, I'm trying to figure this out. I said, you don't make it easy, you know, not because you're doing it on purpose, but because you're 14, right. You know what I'm saying? And, yeah. And you don't know what you're doing either.
Right. Shit, none of us do.
None of us do.
We go through this life just trying to figure it out. That's really right. What it is.
And I said to her, I said, you know, when I say that to you, I'm not saying that as an excuse. Like, I'm saying that so you understand. I said, I'm trying to be as vulnerable and honest here with you. I'm trying to make you understand that I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm trying.
Right.
I am fucking trying because I love you so much. And I just want our relationship to be one where we can talk and we can, whatever. So the conversation ends. She goes her way. The next day we kind of make up because I start playing music. I have her favorite kind of music and we're okay. And somebody says to me, you know, I say to them, you know, it's so hard. Right? Because I feel like I'm failing as a father. And he said, she came and talked to you. She told you what she didn't like. And although you didn't like what she said, she came and talked to you.
Yeah.
And I wasn't getting it. And he said to me, you don't give yourself enough grace. And I was like, oh shit, she did come and talk to me. How many parents are going through shit with their teenagers or their kids and their kids don't even come and talk to them?
Right.
So I must be doing something, right?
Yeah.
That is good enough to allow my children to at least come and talk to me.
No, it's true. One thing that I think is so important, AR, is that you're being honest with her. You know, I can't ever remember my parents tell me they don't know what they're doing. You know, it's always
they knew everything.
Right. You know, and so the fact that you can be honest with her about like, yo, I'm doing the best that I can, you know, and that she feels comfortable enough to come and talk to you. Because I will tell you, at 14, I was trying to figure out ways to stay away from my father. You know, so the fact that she's coming and having these conversations with you says something about who you are as a parent, that she feels empowered enough to know that when she comes to you, regardless, you're going to hear her out, that she feels comfortable enough to come and say, you know what, Dad, this is what's happening, and that you're going to listen to her. You know, so often parents are dismissive of their children because it's like, you don't know what you're talking about, or their voice and their opinions are not important enough, you know, to be listened to. So the fact that the dialogue is happening, it's true. Like, you have to give yourself some more grace because exactly as you said, like, we're all doing the best that we can. And the fact that she's coming to you means that your best is probably better than other parents, you know, whose kids are not coming to them.
And you know what though? I've developed this technique when I'm talking to my children. I'm developing. you know how we're always talking about being present?
Yeah.
But we tend to really be dismissive when it comes to our children. So I've been very, very adamant about implementing this technique, about really being present when I'm talking to my kids, right? And I'm talking to my daughter and she's saying, well, you'll just dismiss me like I'm you know, you say because I'm too young or this or that. And I'm listening to whatever she tells me and I don't let my kid leave. Like I legit stand. Like this conversation just happened like a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, when we first moved into the house and we're standing in the kitchen and she's on one side of the island and I'm looking at her, I'm like, you're not leaving. We're not leaving here until I understand. She goes, you don't understand. I said, well, I'm not leaving. You're not leaving until I understand. Explain it to me again. Mm. And we were there for an hour. Explain it to me again. You said I didn't understand. Okay, explain it to me again. And I'm going to be present. Like, I put my phone away. I'm listening to every single word. And if I have to repeat what you said, let me hear it. Y'all, because some of these children are out here looking for love and affection. Some of these little girls in other boys.
Yeah.
Over the internet, that could be grown-ass men and vice versa. These boys are looking for affection and little girls that have nothing to offer or in other people. And they fall into a bunch of shit that they don't need to fall into just because we don't take the time to listen. Just because we are so fucking dismissive because they're 13, 14, 15, 16, and we think that they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. So because we don't think that they know what the fuck they're talking about, we're not going to listen to them.
Yeah.
I'm not losing now one of my kids, not fucking one of them, to somebody else because I wasn't listening.
Oof. Oh, that's so good.
Nah. It, because at the end of the day, we always like, because then they grow up while they're making their own choices. Yeah, they had to make their own choices because you weren't never listening.
Right.
And instead of being an influence, you are the reason now why they are making these horrible fucking choices. Yes, they're grown and they should be able to make the choice, but you could have, this is what you could have passed down.
Right.
This, the knowledge, the attention, being present, it's better than money.
Yeah.
It's better than money.
Yeah. Let me say, so, the gifts, the toys you buy them, the electronics, the gadgets, none of that really matters. Like children, you spoil them with those things, right? And it becomes just like another thing that in time they don't even care about. They forget about it. They throw it to the side. But what they do remember, they remember the moments where you sat with them, where you had the conversation, where you played with them, where you really gave them the attention. Like, that's what I remember about my parents. I mean, they probably bought me tons of things. I don't remember shit. You know, actually, I remember one doll that they bought. But the reason why I remember the doll wasn't because of the doll. It was because of the lengths they went to get me the doll. You know, so, you know, it's what is put behind. It's the attention that is given. So you're spot on.
You have to. You have to.
Yeah.
Yo, I can tell you that. I can tell you that. I went to go pick up my grandson. Right. This is how simple things are. I went to pick up my grandson last week. For the weekend, and I hadn't seen him in weeks because of the move. So last weekend was the first time he was coming to the house, and his grandmother on the mom's side, she brings her. I went to go pick him up at his other grandmother's house. She brings him down. I hadn't seen him in like three weeks. It was so funny because people like on Facebook were like, "Where's your son? Where's your grandson?" And I'm like, all right. She brings him down and she's got him in the coat and she has him on the arm and she opens the door. 3 weeks pass. He's only one.
Right.
And he looks at me and he looks at her. He looks at me and he looks at her and he smiles. And then he looks at me almost like saying, I told you this motherfucker was going to come and get me. You know what I mean? And then he just jumps.
Yeah.
Tell me, right? And that is a sign that I have made a significant impact in this one-year-old's life, that when he sees me after no matter what length of time, he smiles.
Right.
Right? If I walk into a room, like if he's at his father's house and I walk into his father's apartment and he comes around, his little self comes around the bed, and he just smiles and he runs toward nobody in the planet. All of, you know, my other grandson who's 8 does the same thing. My kids, when they see me, right? Like those are the signs that you're doing something, right? Like when they want to spend that time with you, money can't change that. Those Christmas gifts can't buy that, right? Like if you're not putting in the time, and I wasn't always this dad. Let me say that. I wasn't always this dad. I made plenty of fucking mistakes. Like, I had to learn this the hard way.
Yeah.
You know, but it was either that or lose my kids.
Mm.
Right? Lose my kids to, I almost lost my oldest.
Right.
I almost lost my oldest. And I said, and I remember saying, we had this like intense argument. He said, it's too late. And I said, motherfucker, are you dead? Am I dead?
Yeah.
I said, because last time I checked, I'm 40 and my mother's 60 and we still have a relationship. So it's never too late.
Right.
And I'm just not in a position where I want to lose my children. So if that means I have to be present I have to be more present with these conversations with my children, especially these teenage girls, these teenage boys, especially these teenagers. You have to be more present than you are in this art.
Yes.
Than you are at work. Shit, than you are with your partner. Than you are with, because you choose your partner.
Right.
You choose your art. You choose your business, right? These kids didn't choose shit. They didn't choose for you to have sex and they didn't choose none of that.
Right.
So I when I look at these little girls, I'm not losing you to some relambio over the internet that wants to.
And you could speak from experience because you know who you were, right?
Yeah. I'm not losing you to the old me.
Yes, I love that.
And they're always looking.
Yes.
Without knowing, they're always looking for somebody that resembles their father.
Yes.
Just like I find myself, really connecting with the women that are kind of like my mom.
Right. Yes.
Like I'm attracted to strong ass women that are successful. You know why? Because my mama was a strong-ass woman that was successful and spoke her mind. And those are the type of women that I'm attracted to. Where did I get that from?
Right. It's so true. It's so, so, and it's true when you think about relationships that we do tend to move towards the type of people that are most familiar to us, right? And what does that, our most important relationships get formed and forged when we're children. It's the relationships we have with our parents, right? So depending on how present or not present they were in our lives, that is what we feel comfortable with. And that's often what we seek in the relationships that we have with, significant others. And it's true, like my husband reminds me so much of my father, my sister and her husband. Even though our husbands are different, the things that are important to them, their values, their morals are so similar. They're so reflective of who our dad is. So you're right in that you understand that, and now I want my girls to be attracted to this new version of me. Not who I was.
Because let me tell you something. What I started to see is that some of the behavior, right, was transpiring because the toxic human being that I was had already made a dent.
Wow.
In how they were acting.
Wow. You know what? I have to say, most men don't recognize that. And the fact that you have recognized it, that you have been intentional about saying the hell with this, like, I don't want to continue this toxicity, not just in my own personal life, but in the way that it influences my children, my girls, my son, my grandson, those that are around me. The fact that you can recognize that and that you have said the hell with that, like, I want to be better. And so I'm going to do better. I think is huge. I mean, because that some men don't ever make that realization and they will live their whole life you know, the same way. And then years from now, you know, when they're 70, 80 years old, they look back on their life and now it's like they regret. They live their, they regret everything that they've done, you know, and if they could, you know, change it, they would. But then like, it's too late at that point.
You know, I think that men feel like if they recognize some of that shit, that then their pride is in jeopardy.
Yeah.
I've been a big advocate that pride sometimes can ruin your life, but pride can also save your life.
Yeah.
It just depends which narrative you want pride to go down. I took the same pride that I had in being this fucking toxic dude and shifted that and said, okay, now you're going to be proud in the of recognizing your mistakes and being this better person.
Mm.
But here's the thing, like, if I don't do it, I could either have the pride and say, you know, not me, and lose my daughters.
Right.
Or I could be proud and say, I wasn't shit. I'm going to change that and salvage and make sure that my daughters are on and my sons are on the right path. Right? Because they are watching what you're doing.
Yeah.
And my oldest son has spit that. Like, the conversations that we have about women are so different now.
Mm.
You know? And, you know, it went from me trying to tell him. I remember when he was a teenager, he was like talking to two or three little girls. And I was like, yo, you can't, don't do that. Like, you know, don't treat girls like that. Right. And then he, I remember, I'll never forget. I remember him saying to me, you know whose son I am?
Wow.
And I was like, wow, I didn't have the two legs to stand on.
Wow.
To tell him anything, because what he was seeing was this, what he was seeing, he was putting it into play in his life.
Right.
So I didn't have the moral base
yes.
to correct him.
Right.
Where I knew that my life was changing was now as an adult. I'm having a conversation about 2 years ago. I'm having a conversation with my son. Now he's in his 20s. And I said to him, we're in my bedroom. I said to him, I said, you cannot treat women like that. I said, you know, women are not commodities. Like, you cannot treat women like that. You can't, they're not disposable. You know, and I'm telling, like, you know, I was telling him about a situation that he was having. And he was like, oh man, I didn't think about it. And I was like, oh, he's no longer throwing anything in my face because he's seeing the change
right
in his father. He recognizes now that his father is not the same person.
Right.
Mm. And I was like, because that is the meter.
Yeah. Yes.
If they don't see it, then it's not true.
Right.
Oof. Right. So if your kids don't see it, it is not true.
Mm. So good. So good. Yo, do you, this conversation exceeded everything that, you know, that I had in mind for our conversation today, because we touched like everything. We went from current events to your art, to parenting, just to feminism and how we're supporting you, how you're supporting women. And I feel like we can talk, we can keep talking, but I want to honor your time. Yeah. It's been an hour and a half already. This interview is going to be like a two-parter because just so good. But before I let you go, like, how can my listeners, the viewers, how can they connect with you? How can they support your art? Where can they learn more about what you're doing and putting out there?
You know, across all social media platforms, I am AR Garcia on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, Dominican Soul Productions, as well, shehatescoffee.com. I even have like a shop that I put out. It's called the AR Soul Shop. And all of this is on social media. But I urge, you know, artists, filmmakers and playwrights, Latinos, Blacks, like, you know, us people of color, you know, my company, Dominican Soul Productions, we are invested in trying to bring our art to the forefront. So it's not just about my company just putting my art out there. You know, we're highly invested in putting other people's art out as well. So, you know, I'm working on other projects that are not mine as well. So, you know, you could, like I said, you can reach out to us at Dominican Soul Productions on Instagram or myself. I am A.R. Garcia. And Nancy, thank you so much.
Thank you for giving me your time. I value it. I always love having conversations with you. I feel like we always go deep, like it's never on the surface. We talk about, you know, just real things. And I value your transparency, you know, and the way that you're just so honest about who you are, not just as an artist, but as a man. Because what you do, AR, is that you give other men permission to be honest about themselves. And it's not something that we often see, you know, so the fact that you do it, I think, is incredibly important. And I know that you surround yourself with other men who are the same way. And so I think that if you continue to do that, you're really just starting to shift the vibration out in the universe and in the world, and you're allowing men to really show up, you know, as who they are in that moment, recognizing like, yo, you don't have to continue being who you are. You can own your shit and you can decide to change and you can become a better version of yourself.
Never too late, yo.
Yeah.
It's never too late.
So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. For those of you that tuned in, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Until next time, mi gente, go out there, crush those goals.
Say hello to the family.
Okay. I will. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
Okay, honey. Right. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Nancy Ruffin Show.